find something like a dance, a dance experience for this wide variety of people. Now, previously, okay. Today is March 8th, 1997. I'm Buff Brennan. I'm the faculty at University of Wisconsin in dance, and I'm talking today with Hermine Davidson, an alumni of the university from the year 1932. And we're just going to chat about all kinds of things.
Right.
Okay, so whatever you want to talk about or
I guess I'd like to say what it seemed like in 1928 when we arrived.
Mm-hmm.
The freshman class, I don't remember all of the, I could not name all of the people, but there were, I expect, somewhere around 20 of us. One young woman was named Catherine Kane. She was from New York City. Vickery Hubbard was from Boston. I remember there was one young woman from Louisiana who had never seen snow. So there was a quite an eclectic group spread from far parts. And how they all knew about the dance program and landed at Wisconsin, I don't have any idea at all. But the backgrounds of most of us had been some kind of ballet. Very few had done anything that might be called now modern dance, or even had explored through other forms of motion the thing that we now think of as modern dance technique and composition. But it was fun because we got acquainted, obviously, quickly, and I had the impression, Mark was both gratified and a little, you have to say, intimidated, that would be the wrong word. But I think she was stretched to provide something like a dance experience for this wide variety of people. Now previously, since the major had been initiated in 26, there had been groups, and some of these women turned up during our earlier years, came back, in other words, having graduated in 26 or 27, would come in for a visit, and we did get acquainted with her. I remember Bernice Van Gelder was one. She was from California. Edith Boyce was another. I don't know where she came from. But some of those earlier people were already doing, gone back, and were introducing dance in their, in whatever educational program they were employed. And it might have been collegiate, I don't know. What was your background? Where were you born? In
Madison, Wisconsin.
You're a Madison person?
Yeah, and here, see, Madison was a good dance and theater town going back many, many years. The history of theater in Madison included Sarah Bernhardt. No one has a performer.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Pavlova in a concert in Madison in sometime in the 1920s. There were any number of other dance performers, including the Denishon Company, was here in the 20s, with both Doris Humphrey and Martha Graham and Ted Shawn in the company as dancers. Well, Doris Shawn and Lucy Dennis were the graduates. So there was an acceptance of dance in the city where it's small size. University in those days was, I'm sure, under 20,000, 15,000 to 20,000 perhaps. Mm-hmm. But there was a lively art department, and people were very supportive, like Max Otto and Fosbury, for instance, of the idea of a dance major. Marge had been supported by, you see, at that point there was not a separate school of education. Entropia was in LNS. Mm-hmm. It was, became a separate school during the time I was an undergraduate. I don't know just when, but in that period. But the major, recognized as a degree granting major, was tied to the School of Education being a degree granting mm-hmm. major, and it all came into a flower sometime in that 4 year period between 28 and 32. But I don't know the history of that, you have to go look. It's all in the archives, I'm sure, somewhere. Marge's background in movement, in dance movement, was meager. She had been a very good athlete and loved athletic activities, a good basketball player. And it was Blanche Trilling who persuaded her, picked Marge out as a wonderful member of the faculty who she could push into the innovation of a dance program in Wisconsin. Blanche Trilling was an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. She was all for getting everything for her department. Mm-hmm. Great one. And that was, you know, good. Yes, you needed people like mm-hmm. that. So when Marge went off to New York, and I don't know when her first trip was before 28, because she was here in Madison and was here, as far as I know, most of each year. There were, of course, periods of breaks, vacation time. She might, and I know once during our undergraduate years, she did go to New York and came back. And you remember, do you have the old diary that I excerpted?
Yes.
All right. Somewhere in there it says about her coming back and talking to us about how there's so much work to do to make dance, never mind, looking up, to give dance a place in education, as an education experience. So I surmised that the New York activity was more maybe theater, I'm not sure. There are two different people that I think pushed Marge in a rather provocative way into looking at dance as a broader possibility. And one was Bertha Arthur. Mm-hmm. Bertha was the daughter of a very prominent physician family in Chicago. And how Marge got acquainted, or how Bertha got acquainted with Marge, I don't know. But Bertha was here even as a high school kid in Madison, and this would have been probably in the middle to late 20s. And absorbing what Madison was doing, I don't think she didn't do a degree here.
Well, she didn't.
I don't believe so.
I don't know.
So I don't,
some would assume she was an alumni, but we don't know that.
I think I'm going to look that up. But she was a beautiful young woman and moved with tremendous authority. I can't put this year by year, mm-hmm. but during the 28 to 32, my 4 year period, Bertha did a solo performance in Chicago, which was very well received, and at the Vivian Theater, which was a good place for dance. If you've been in it, mm-hmm. it was fairly, you were close to the action. She also did much of the same material in a solo performance at the Guild Theater in New York, which I saw in 1935. There was a period in there. And that, it was kind of lost because the theater was too big. Granted, it's a small statue and the material is very precise, but it didn't make as much of a spread, a splash as it might have if it had been given in New York in a better setting. I'm converting to say this is Prince's contribution. Now, I think she was one of the people that began to bring life back to the sense that there was a lot going on in dance outside of Madison, and that she needed to chew in on it. There was a certain resentment that we sensed about New York from March.
From March to March.
It was too bad. I think but at the same time, every time there was something going on in the area of Madison, I mean Milwaukee, Chicago, she saw to it that we got there. Mm-hmm. We went to the dance, as many dance majors as could do it, went to Chicago, we saw Big Mun, we saw Kreuzberg, because we brought Kreuzberg to Madison. Mm-hmm. Marx has sponsored Kreuzberg in concerts.
During the time that you were an undergraduate.
And he had a big influence on March. Mm-hmm. This was the sort of the European character dance that he brought, but it was a broadening away and challenged us technically in a way that we were not getting otherwise. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as I know, at that time, Kreuzberg never taught a master class. He did in some later periods, but not all of a sudden before World War II, because I think he didn't come back here after the 1945. Mm-hmm. I think this would have been before that. The other situation that I want to mention was, of course, the growing influence of Martha Hill on the dance and education program, because Martha Hill teaching at New York University, which is a teacher training program, also at Bennington College, which is an art, the dance program was aligned with the theater program there. During the summer, Bennington School of the Dance was enrolling many, many educators who went for that 6 weeks concentrated period, and then made it possible for the dance companies to have appointments to dance in the colleges in which they were teaching. Mm-hmm. So they set up a collegiate circuit as a result of Martha Hill's work. And I give Martha Hill an enormous amount of credit for that. Mm-hmm. Martha Hill had been here at Wisconsin in a summer school.
She had.
And again, I don't know when it was. It was not between 28 and 32. It was earlier than that.
Earlier? Oh.
But she had been a member, one of the first members of Martha Graham's company when she was first doing concerts in New York City. And Martha Hill moved well. She had a good sense of technique, was very good at bringing compositions out of young dancers, as I watched her in New York University. But she and Marsh did not get along at all. Mm. It was quite a schism. Mm-hmm. And I always felt happy about that, because then when I left Wisconsin, went for 3 years to Ohio State and then on to New York City, and began to see what there was going on in New York. Mm-hmm. And I was worried about this. I thought more of this understanding should be part of the Wisconsin program. Mm-hmm. March's technique was effective when Ruth Glasso came to Wisconsin.
Really?
In 1930. Oh yeah. Because you see, Ruth was exploring movement from the point of view of space, time, and force. Mm-hmm. Not connected to dance, but connected to projectile ball drawing,
sure,
whatever. And I know that they, when Ruth came, which was in, I think, 1930, the whole faculty did some exploring with Glasso of these factors in motion. And Marsh began to see the application of this to dance with.
Ah.
So that was the beginning of the Space Time Force.
It was, and this, no, this was during the time you were a student?
Yeah, 1939. The last 2 years that I was an undergraduate. By the time Ellen Moore arrived, which is a little later, this was a very well-established pattern of March's approach and technique.
Well, that's interesting, because I think that's something that's, certainly I don't know if we're clear, I'm certainly not clear about as to when that started.
Yeah,
so what, when March was teaching you in the beginning, what was her focus? It was on, not on space-time enforcement as concepts, but as something else.
A great deal of the time we spent on the floor, prone, body extended, was exploring leads to motion.
Mm-hmm.
This would be, for instance, a rotational movement from a hip lead or a shoulder lead or a leg crossing one leg over there and rolling.
Mm-hmm.
It was very undemanding.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you were supposed to think about, but to concentrate on the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard to transfer that to a standing position because it doesn't really resonate.
Mm-hmm.
The whole tension is different.
Mm-hmm.
And I, having come from ballet, where there was more demand for balance and for precision, such as you might have expected from a kid going to ballet, this did not grab me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a lot of exploring of locomotor patterns, like polka, shottish, waltz, moving across the floor, but no, not the kind of thing that Louise did, which she
can't help.
Using a variety of step patterns plus the implication for total body movement, head, shoulders, arms, in relation to what you're doing. And Louise did bring up enormous, more demand from the point of view of technical.
Because she was a dancer, so because
she was so good. Well, and she had come through Honey Wong, who was not suspect, as Martha Graham was. I think she even did one concert at Bascom. I'm not certain about that. But Kreutzberg did several. And I remember we went to Milwaukee, and one of the young companies of a follower of Isadora Duncan in Germany had trained a group of young dancers, and they were on tour. We saw them, Ashla Enters, who was, really more theater.
Asha?
Ashna,
E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E-N-T-E
talked to going back again. I'm trying to sort of stay on this four-year period. We brought Bertha to Madison and did a concert in which Arches did some of the program and Bertha did some solos. And that was very, very well received. Because it didn't depend on Bertha doing the whole thing.
This was Bertha Oxford?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it was probably was my junior or senior year, because with the Oxford connection at the medical school, we were invited to a very elaborate post-concert reception at one of the medical school faculty's houses in University Heights. And Marge said, told us we all had to dress in formals and behave ourselves. Eat delicately. But it was fun. It was quite a production. As Marge began to be aware of the implication of space, time, and force, she sort of approached movement from the point of view of percussive lyrical, explosive, gave those characteristics, which broadened away from the just relaxed flow that had been the earlier stuff. Except for the folk dance kind of footwork that we had been exposed to. And we did do compositions, but and the artist programs were made of student work. They weren't, March didn't do compositions. Ellen, who's also
Ellen
McDonald, didn't do compositions. Everything that was on the artist programs was a result of student composition. And some of it was pretty awful, I'm sure. It was pretty sappy. But there were some things that stood out. And we always had a following. We always built Bascom Theater two or three times during the dance programs.
What was March teaching and what was the...
Ellen taught rhythmic form analysis. That was her business. March taught, and they both taught technique classes, both to the dance majors and to the and to the required courses, required enrollees in motor in dance movement. March taught something I think would be called history and theory. I don't remember much of that. Most of it seemed to me, was spontaneous with the dance majors during technique class, suddenly verging into discussion of that. Of course, we had human anatomy, pretty intensive course, and the famous pictures of Marge with the skeleton. Which were very soundly based, but you couldn't move the skeleton. It was just there. It was just there as a demonstration of the fact that we were all endowed with this. She was very receptive to us as young people. She didn't like it if we departed. I remember Orpa Mitchell, who was a very beautiful young woman, and lovely, dark hair with texture and weight, and it was quite long, and she decided, this was in the early 30s, this is a damn nuisance, so she went and got it cut short, and Mars just blew up at her, said she'd done the very worst thing to herself she could.
Well, now Mars had short hair.
Yeah, I know, never had long hair.
Her cutting her own hair.
She, I remember her saying one time for a production, I want you to wear good strong brassieres. I don't want you to look like little cows. So there was a certain sense of
decorum.
Kind of move us in the right direction. Costuming, we had to do it. We had to, it was, she thought it was part of our training. To be good enough at designing and sewing to make costuming part of our background. We were also expected to be good enough at the piano to do something in the way of accompanying. Not much, but a little. The undergraduate courses were a joy, really, because although it was very strenuous, we had the sequence of science. Starting with bodies, and then zoology, and then anatomy and kinesiology, that sequence. We had a lot of courses in, well, I remember there was a full year requirement of philosophy, a semester of Max Otto's famous, what was that called? Something in nature. I'll think of it later. We had music. We had a semester of music composition, pretty severe. I remember we learned how to write hymn tune accompaniment. In the music department.
In the music. Yeah, we took music.
We did stage design and had to do box sets in little boxes of, like, we choose an assignment. I remember one course, we had to write a production for children in theater, and it was, not bad. In speech, we had public speaking. We also had speech one, which was taught by Gertrude Johnson, who was Marge's roommate at that time, the apartment that they shared. There was a third member, I don't know who that was. But Gertrude was a demanding teacher. And she'd have a fit because she said we didn't stand up and protect ourselves in speech. We might be able to do it in dance, but we had to learn to do it in speech. She scared hell out of me. I had point. So that the, when you got through the 4 years, you really had a pretty extensive humanitarian major, which I've always been afraid. We had a year of art history, and in fact, I had 2 years of art history. We had, and the first year was with Oscar Hagen, who was Uta Hagen's father. Uta was a well-known theater professor. And this was at 1:20 in the afternoon. And it was in Bascom Hall in the big lecture hall. And of course, with many slides, theater was dark, the lecture hall was darkened. And he would start lecturing with the slides, and suddenly, half an hour, he'd switch on the lights to see who was asleep. You had to pay attention. Well, there were no old bard in the 20s and early 30s. The taxpayers were going to get their money's worth. And it was like that. I had a year of ancient history with a man who was from Russia named Vasiliev. He was an excellent teacher. But it took us a week to get to understand his accent. You just couldn't get it until you listened to him for a week. Excellent course. And that's why I say that it was demanding and culturally very broad, but with this science stream behind it. The dance majors were required to take whatever it took in the department to be able to teach two individual and one team's work, because we weren't to be employable unless we could do more than just dance. And we sweat through that. I had a terrible time with tennis. I never taught tennis in my life after that. But swimming was fine. That was no problem. Volleyball in those days was backpack. It wasn't set up as far, you know. So we got through it that way. The following, now I'd like to jump. The 3 years that I was at Ohio State, I was introduced to the idea that I had better get to New York, because one of the teachers who arrived at Ohio State the same year I did, the fall of 32, had her PhD from New York University. She was brought in to teach theory. Her background was in kinesiology and in the science area.
This was in dance, though.
In physical education.
But you were there for the dance program.
I was supposed to teach dance and swimming.
Oh, you were teaching in Ohio?
I went from here.
I see.
In those years, kids with just a bachelor's degree could be teaching in a collegiate setting. We were given what were called instructorships, not teaching, not TAs. And low paying, but you know, you got one, right? I don't know whether there was a limit for the length of time you could stay as an instructor. I suppose it was. I wasn't planning on staying that long anyway. But one of the women that influenced me was Ella Waterman, who had gotten her PhD at NYU and was a personal friend of Martha Hills and Edie Ballmer's and Mary Jo Shelley's and the Brewers. And it was Edie Ballmer who was in Chicago doing TAP. Among other things. And of course, Martha Hill was at that time at New York University. That even hadn't yet begun its program, but it was going to very shortly after that. So Emma Waterman convinced me that I'd better take New York as the next opportunity to do graduate work and explore. And I took her seriously. We shared an apartment one year, and she was a very, very good mentor, very wonderful woman, very intelligent. And so in 35, I planned to go that fall to New York City and do, start a master's degree at NYU. But I went prior to that to the summer, Bennington Summer School, that had started the summer of 35.
It had started?
They had started.
Yes,
34 was the first year. And Martha Oxner went to Bennington in 34 and went back, and I know, talked to Marge about it, because I heard from Marge that Grandma had been very successful. Dewey Horse just took Grandma on as a practically dancer kind of to show what was going on, and it's important. And Bertha apparently made, see, Louis was teaching composition, and but doing it on the musical forms. So you made compositions for Louis, rondos, and
pre-classic.
Sure. Well, the pre-classic was another whole series.
It was another series. Uh-huh.
Those, but the dances are musical, are for music. And Bertha had made, Rob or what it was, Chacon or something. And Louis cited that as a solution to how you want to go about this in the teaching of composition at Bennington in 35, the year after Bennington. So she had success from that point of view there, and I think some of that got carried back to Wisconsin.
Now, is she a student or a teacher there?
She was
sort of
parent?
Student. A student. She came as a student.
Yeah, that was the first summer. The summer that I was there in 35 was the first year that Martha brought in a resident a company.
Uh-huh.
And the Graham Company was there in residence for the 6 weeks. And we got a good dose of Graham technique, those who were enrolled, and got acquainted with women in the company. I mean, they were on campus there. And they were very friendly. They were, many of them, our own age. And it was fun. It was good. Then in New York that fall, I went to the Graham Studio, which was just down Fifth Avenue. At 55 Fifth Avenue, that was below 10th Street. And of course, New York University School of Education was at Washington Square. So it was quite a, and Louis Horace had a studio in the village, and it was all very easy to get around. And I liked Graham Technique very much. It was very demanding. It was very much contraction release, but it, and you didn't have to compose using Graham Technique, but by gosh, you better know where your feet were. Better know what you were up to. No improvisation, no fudging, no getting away with, no shoddy for Louis. The Martin Hill's classes for the, you see, at New York University, we did not have classes for majors other than for majors. Mm-hmm. The program was a professional program for teachers, both men and women. Mm-hmm. And I had not only to supplement, we did have adult evening classes in the time slots where New York City teachers could come and take graduate honors.
Mm-hmm.
4 to 6, 6 to 8, even 8 to 10 in the evening. And I taught some of that. Now that would be modern dance, tap, folk, anything that was would give the teachers in New York City a chance, physical education to broaden their preparation. Tap was very good because this was the period of Shirley Temple and Bojangles, and many of those physical education teachers in the New York public high schools had to deal with classes of 150, 200 kids in the gym at once. And what could you do? You did either gymnastics, dance technique, tap. That was about it. Sure couldn't do sports things.
Now where did your tap background come from?
I had done tap way back in my ballet period here with the O'Cal. But I didn't carry it forward. And in those notes that you have, it tells about Elma and Agnes McCall, another one of my Agnes
McCall,
and myself going down to Leo and taking tap. And this was during that 28 to 32 period. The reason being that Elma was going to have to teach tap or clog, as they called it, since Alfreda Moskroff had, who had been teaching it, had gone on to greener pastures. So Elma didn't want to go alone. She persuaded a couple of us to go along with her. So I picked it up there, and then when I went to New York and knew I was going to have to teach tap, I did use Edie Wohlwerger's material because I thought that was on better ground, better, the tone was better, and used Edie's material, teaching that in turn, not only to the women majors, but to the men majors. Because J.B. Nash, who was chairman of the department, thought that men ought to know more about dance as well, even if they didn't teach it. So one of my assignments was to teach modern dance technique, tap dance to the men's department of undergraduate majors, and then we did folk dance with the kids together. And at that, then I had gone out to Lloyd Shaw, I think that was the summer 1930, and picked up the Western Square Dance, Pink Bloom, went back to NYU and taught the kids how to call, and we did square dance and so on. It was a nice yeasty period. And of course, dance concerts in New York every single weekend were concerts. Mm-hmm. The concert companies, Graham, Humphrey, Wyman, Anyamo, Louise was dancing with them, and ballet all over the place. New York New School for Social Research, that little hole on just off Fifth Avenue. And in the basement level of New School for Social Research, they had an amphitheater. It was, the floor was maybe 25, 30 feet, but there were ramps, seats all around. And they invited various ethnic groups in New York City to come and keep alive their dance. And you could go down and watch. You couldn't join. So if you wanted to, many, many times you just went and watched all kinds of groups from New York City to Canada. I don't know if anybody has a record of this anywhere. In the fall of 35, Marge was invited to do a demonstration in New York School for Social Research in the San Francisco. And she recruited as many of us as were close enough to come who had been doing production in most recent past 32, maybe 31, 32, to get to New York over a Thanksgiving weekend, put together what we could do in this space, which had no theater, no proscenium, which was part of the New School for Social Research program of extension activities in dance. And I remember very, very well that weekend because I had a cousin who was a Wisconsin graduate in anthropology and married to my cousin. And they were living in New York City and up near Columbia, and I could stay with them, and it was fun. John Martin came to the production. And afterward, and I never did follow up. But he did talk to me, though. All I knew, there was this standing here man. Knew something about dance, apparently. And he asked me where I was, what I was doing and where I was. And I said, well, I stayed in the house. Had I thought of coming to New York? Well, at that point, it was just my first year in teaching. And he said, I think it would enjoy it. We have an opportunity. Well, I never thought. Later on, that was kind of unusual.
John Martin? Yes.
I'm sure he was.
In New York, you know, the time we were.
No, I'm not talking about the young man. I don't know whether he published by that time. Or I knew he was writing. I mean, I later found out he was writing in the New York Times. But March, I don't think that was ever reviewed. It was well received. I know we were given compliments for being able to adapt material to this, space. Another thing that happened during that time is, again, probably not recorded. We were invited, a bunch of us, well, Marge would be invited, and she'd take along as many as she could go to Milwaukee to do a demonstration at a physical education association. In those days, it was not HPER.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the Association of Physical Education. A meeting, and that was when the dance section was formed. The Midwest section, but from there it became national. As a result, I suppose we were there a couple days. I think some of it is in that little diary. I don't know how much of it, but anyway,
yeah,
that was kind of fun. After that, we frequently did go with March to be a demonstration. It was always whoever could go, who could get free, maybe anywhere 5 to 10 of us would go. I remember when we brought Kreisberg for a concert, I was detailed to go and meet the train before here. And I, because being a town girl, I had a car. And this was in those days an old fashioned Rio Trigger. You remember what Rios were?
No.
They were like Buicks, big old heavy things, which my father thought was very safe.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a facility for 7 passengers, but the little jump seats, which, did you ever see one of those train cars?
I've seen pictures of it.
He had those taken out because he didn't think that we were going to use those, and there was more room for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Kreisberg and his accompanist, Wilkins, at the old Northwestern Depot, which is down on Prairie Street in East Williamson. It's now the headquarters of Madison Gas.
Oh,
an elegant old building. Met him there, and he and Wilkins climbed in and put their suitcases in the space between their feet in the back of the front seat. And we went up to the Park Hotel, which they were staying at. Wilkins got out, took the luggage, put it on the sidewalk, and turned to help Kreisberg out. Kreisberg tripped over the luggage and took a pratfall on the sidewalk. And I was just aghast. He got up and he brushed himself off. He said, "Val, dancer on the stage, but I get out of the car like any other temp fool." He marched into the hotel. he was really a charming man.
Mm-hmm.
And by this time, Marge and Wayne were well associated. And Wayne was, and they were both very supportive of Kreisberg.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, had almost, not parental, but maybe godfather-godmother relationship. He came back to Madison. He came back with a partner, a young woman. I don't remember her name. I do have a lot of these old programs, and I have the old Marcus's program.
Oh, you should
make so I should those. Pull that stuff up for you.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Janice, what was her name? She was here a couple years ago. She's at Stanford.
Oh, Ross.
Ross.
Janice Ross.
She had a bunch of the stuff. I gave it to her first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether she's persisted in her history of March.
I don't know. She was working, of course, on Anna Halpern. Was she not?
She didn't come to that. She was here. She had her daughter with her. And we spent, a better part of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And when I took her to supper with a little girl, a charming child.
I remember when she came in.
Yeah. But I don't know what's happening. She had a lot of the stuff and she sent it back to me, so it is kind of in a package together. I could get it out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think right now, but because it's on her Facebook, yeah, but I'll look it up. Those old dams, those old archivist programs are useful in this history.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be, I mean, they have no use here sitting in my basement. They might well go into archives, but I don't know if you want to take. Can you, you've got other things to do than to follow archives.
Yeah, well, I've got some things that do have to go into archives, and I think Anna's going to be doing things.
All right, yeah.
Pull that stuff out for you.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Janice, what was her name? She was here a couple years ago. Ross. Ross.
Janice from.
She had a bunch of the stuff. I gave it to her first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether she's persisted in her history of life.
She was working, of course, on Anna Halpern.
She didn't come to that. When she was here, she had her daughter with her. And we spent a better part of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And when it took her to supper with a little girl, Charmita.
I remember her coming when she came in.
Yeah. But I don't know what's happened. She had a lot of the stuff and she sent it back to me, so it is kind of in a package together. I could get it out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think right now, but because it's on her Facebook.
Yeah,
but I'll look it up. Those old dams, those old archivist programs are useful in this history.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be, I mean, they have no use here sitting in my basement. They might well go into archives, but I don't know what you want to take. Can you, you've got other things to do than to follow archives.
I've got some things that do have to go into archives, and I think Anna's going to be doing things.
All right, yeah.
Whatever.
I did give, and I don't know whatever happened. I had gotten the Dance Observer magazine from almost the beginning. I did the first three issues that we did were in a large format, almost newspaper size, and I didn't have those. But I had all the rest up until his death, which that's when it stopped. And I had the first maybe 5 to 10 years bound. Which I did give to Lathrop. I don't know what it kept.
That's probably in the archives because we moved it out.
But then there were a bunch of loose copies that I didn't pay to have bound. And I think I turned them all over.
Mm-hmm.
Because there wasn't a lot about Wisconsin, but occasionally the Wisconsin people.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you about one of the things that sort of bothered me in that last retrospective was that this assumption was there was not much going on before 19, post World War II, and there was this really pretty solid 20 years of development, and I could see what the influences were.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Blanche Trilling was after me to come back and teach, and I kept I didn't want to confront Marge, because I did at that time feel somewhat critical until Louise came in. Louise began to bring much more solid technique.
Right.
You see, by the time Louise came, I was out of dance.
Yeah.
The period that I'm really talking about is 1928 to 1942, World War II, pretty much terminated New York University's undergraduate program. The men were being drafted or volunteering. And the whole staff disappeared. Martha Hill became very involved with Juilliard and with Bennington. And Elizabeth Yean Myers, who was chairman of the Women's Department, went to Washington. Her husband joined the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been a staff member, a faculty member, teaching all the sciences to the undergraduate majors. Joe Persicano joined the Waves, and I went with Red Cross. It really decimated the department, and
was that. Coming back to Madison, Louise had arrived and was teaching, and I got this job at the Madison Public School, but it was joy to have Louise's 4:30 technique class, and I just piggybacked it. I didn't sign up to pay for it, I just went. And it was marvelous to see what she was bringing.
Yeah.
Now, I think this was not only a, it was a major technique, it was anybody who was willing to keep up with an advanced technique. But those diagonals across the floor, Louise would set a pattern. And pursuing it, it would be just marvelous to watch in her critique. And then repeating it on the opposite diagonal, so you did everything she said, both the right side and left side, which was, it was excellent work. And Louise didn't do a lot of choreography. Robin did for herself, you know. She came, she followed Louise, she'd been in New York. I don't know anything about Robin's early life. There had been a personal history there, but I never explored that. But you know, I got her to teach in Madison Public Schools for a couple of years.
Robin?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. No.
I wanted to find out how much a modern dance teacher could accomplish with elementary school kids, given a chance. So I persuaded the superintendent to, instead of hiring another PE major, to hire a dance major, and Robin was anxious to try also. Then I had to persuade two principals to put her on. Well, that wasn't very hard because there were, some of the principals were quite anxious to explore. And Pearl LaRue at Washington School, which is now the Board of Education headquarters on David Street, close to campus, had in her school a program for kids with handicapped motor problems. Some of them were in wheelchairs. Some of them were on devices, crutches or so on. That's why that school had a ramp instead of steps. And Robin took on these kids. She said, they can do something. I'll see to it. And she did rhythmic things with them. And I remember going into that class of hers once. She was very gifted in tumbling and got kids freed up their ability to tumble. And the whole 35 kids were cartwheeling all around the room. Beautiful form. The other school in which she taught was Black Belt, which is the school near East Side, Dayton, Mifflin Street. And the principal there was Maureen Bredesen, who became a very close friend of mine eventually. Lived down the street here. But this, and Robin, I don't remember when she taught, 2 or 3 years. It was a fair sample. And what she was able to accomplish with kids was just marvelous. It was very difficult to spread it through the teaching, my teaching staff. I had about 11 or 12 women who taught exclusively elementary PE, assigned all over town. Well, we were very good in Madison with facilities. A lot of the schools had two gyms, all of them had one. And I could schedule in such a way that we could get, and we got 3 45-minute periods a week eventually in that program. But it was not all hands, obviously. It was hard to be able to get people to, they had to get permission from the principal in which the teacher was teaching to have a free day to go and watch Robin in her school, find a substitute, and mechanically not thought. And of course, you had to pay for that one way or another because substitutes didn't come for none of it. Well, that was an interesting period of time. I was very anxious that Ruth Klasso do more investigation of children's moving, because I felt that to study projectile by adults throwing basketballs was kind of the end of the game. It would be better to study how did 5 to 10-year-olds run? How did they hop? How did they leap? What was the body mechanics that was necessary for someone to be a good runner?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get anywhere. Hal was at the time, this was later, I think, but nobody was interested in this.
Mm-hmm. This was in the, this was in the 40s?
40s.
Mm-hmm.
40s, early 50s. I stayed in that job until 54. Mm-hmm. That child never married, and I got busy building, bringing up the kids.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a huge loss, except, and this I'm sure is completely lost. See, Mark Meyer had been on faculty and had resigned, as you, because you know about that.
Vaguely, I.
This is not an audio.
Yes,
it is. Well, Mark had left her university position, but she wanted to teach, so I invited her to teach in public schools to see again what could you do with kids moving. And she did some marvelous teaching of sports skills, and sort of quietly did some research on kids, what made a good child at projectile, at throwing.
Mm-hmm.
What made a good child at running or leaping or hopping? What were the factors that accomplished what you're trying to do? And she did some actual research and wrote it up, but I don't know where it happened to her.
Yeah.
She died some years after that. And I never, I didn't like to make an issue of what had happened to her.
I was at the university now, or just teaching in the school?
Just in the school.
Just in the school.
Mm-hmm. And only in elementary. Mm-hmm. Never wanted to teach in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Look at that marvelous person. Well, you see, in the field of physical education for women, which was in the 30s, 40s, not spoken of with any degree of honesty or enthusiasm, lesbianism was a very common fact.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to Ohio State in the fall of 1932, the alliances between members of the Women's Department of Physical Education were very strong and very traditionally and existed over a period of time. There were some that were re-aligned during the 3 years I was there. There was tremendous tension. Those of us that were aware, and I had been aware of the fact that women could be gay, because I had an older cousin woman, 5 or 6 years older than I, who had been gay. And but one of my aunts, who was herself an MD, was aware of this, and her particular professional area was nervous diseases.
Mm.
And she clued the whole family in that Dorothea and her dear friend SB were members of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And this was accepted by all of my parents and my parents, mm-hmm. brothers and sisters, even my grandmother.
Unusual.
And so that going into the situation at Ohio State was no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
These were all professional women. They were very good at their jobs, and with whom they associated and how they arranged their private lives, as far as I was concerned, that was okay. Going on into New York, it was quite obvious that a great many people in the dance world, men and women, were gay. And again, that's nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
If you're professional and good, so what? Mark Morris, certainly, present period, and were the two very, very gifted. I would say their names. One
Yeah.
Marty saying.
Yeah, yeah. So this factor at Wisconsin also uses too. And it, you didn't know he was going into it, but there, it was no, and I don't think that any of the students ever paid any, I never heard any talk among the undergraduates whatsoever. That was that. The excitement in the dance department consisted of doing dances, having the dances be seen in production, bringing other dancers in, and spreading the word. Sound like we had a job to do. It was kind of fun.
That was great. What? How did Orcasus work when you were there? What was it?
Well, it
started earlier.
It was a dance club. It existed when I got there. There had been dance productions in, I'm sure there were, because I remember as a kid, now it may have been as early as 1920, it was more likely maybe 1925, there was an outdoor theater behind Bascom. And I remember being taken to a production there. That was all dance, done by, I suspect, members of the physical education department, because at that time there was pretty no dance major.
This was what year, probably?
Probably 25, or 24, 25 in there. Someone of Marge's young women who was enthusiastic taught kids classes in the social room of the downtown Episcopal Church, Esther Violet's Hall, it's called. And as a youngster, I was sent to those. Anytime there was any kind of dance going on, my mother saw to it that I got there
for you.
And we did, I don't remember much of what we did, but I remember I loved it because we got to take off our underwear and put on these little flimsies. That was just good. And one of those classes, another one of the kids in the group named Eleanor Parkinson, I'll tell you a little bit about her later, the whole class got to go down to the backyard of the governor's mansion, I don't know how this was accomplished, and had our class outdoors in the grass. Well, we were dismissed, and Eleanor and I took advantage to go down and go in the lake in our flimsies. My mother. Oh my. But I don't remember that those classes were followed up very much. Probably would be one year and then somebody would go off to something else.
Did you have, in Orcasus, was there a an initiation and
oh, yeah.
Senior and anything about that? I know that there had been a senior and a junior Orcasus.
The junior was later. And the times that I was active, Orcasus, there were sort of tryouts, but it was really more pro forma. Anybody who was moving with maybe a year or two of technique and who wanted to commit the time, because it was pretty demanding. And the group was usually 25 to 35 in size. Now, within that group, the more advanced, that is, people closer to graduation, would obviously get the best parts in production. And they were more experienced and more confidence. But you moved up rather quickly if you wanted to work at it. But I ran into strengths, I'll tell you the story. How much more of this do you want to do?
As long as you want to continue.
One of the very beautiful dancers of my period was a young woman named Catherine Kay. She was this New Yorker who had been dancing. She and her twin sister Mary had danced in New York. Now, I don't know with whom. But Kitten moved very beautifully. She's a young Jewish woman and had a flair, had excitement. Well, she did not finish as a dance major. She came to Orcasus, she came to classes, and I don't know why she dropped out of the major. I don't have any idea. But she did. I think she finished in, March or, I don't know, something. She graduated with us anyway. And then I lost track of her because she did not take a dance job.
Mm-hmm.
When Mary Hinkson was here in the fall, she came up to me and a young woman who was there came up to me and said, I have a very dear friend in Colorado, in Denver, who asked me to find out if there was anybody at this, at Buddy's production from the class of 1932. And she said, I guess your name was turned up. And I said, yeah. She said, well, I was to bring greetings from my friend in Denver to anybody. I said, who was it? Catherine Kane, Marcus Dieter. I said, for heaven's sakes, I haven't caught up with Kitten since we graduated.
Mm-hmm.
I want her phone number. So later that day, she called back and gave me Kitten's phone number. Immediately called her in Denver. Said, this is a voice from the past. She said, my gosh. I said, fill me in. So we had this conversation, then I subsequently talked to her again later, a few days later. She'd been married to a man named Marcus, had three boys, sort of widespread, a few years apart. He had died very tragically, and she had remarried to a man who was an artist, practicing oil painter in Denver, apparently, successful. So we exchanged what we were going to be doing. And she said, what are you up to next? I said, well, actually, although I'm on crutches, we're going to Alaska for Christmas because our daughter, son-in-law, and three grandchildren live there. And Lisa says, you've got to come. You can read to the kids. You can play chutes and ladders. You can, Charlie can help me in the kitchen. And we'll have a Christmas together. So I said, okay, we'd go. So I said to Kitten, we're going to Anchorage. Oh, she said, I have a good friend who lives in Anchorage. A young woman named Avril Fallon, call her up for me, will you? And I said, sure. So I, after Christmas, we were there just a few days before, I called up this lady, Kitten gave me her phone number, and explained that I was bringing greetings from Catherine Dieter. Oh, she said, I'm so glad to talk to you. Her husband was my godfather, and I have some of his paintings, and I said, well, it's curious because your phone number is the same general area as our daughter and son-in-law's phone number. Where do your kids go, children, where do they go to school? She said, well, as a matter of fact, they would be going to this school, but they go to Rogers Park. Well, Rogers Park is this citywide school for exceptional kids, and our 10-year-old granddaughter goes there. So I said, oh, well, our granddaughter goes there. What? How old is your son? She said, what's your granddaughter's name? Since she said he's 10. I said, Lynn Munter. She said, you know what? My son had your granddaughter's name to exchange Christmas presents.
It is a small world. Oh, in Alaska.
So we planned, we were going, she invited us to come and
dance connection.
Yeah.
Strange.
I said to Lisa, do you know this woman? Have you, your PTA, have you crossed paid a path? She said, no, but I expect we will. She was at that time president of the Hoffman School PTA, from which the 7-year-old is enrolled. The 10-year-old had been there until she went to Rogers Park. So Lisa said, we'll get together. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, another question. You said that Elna Migdal was teaching a rhythmic analysis course.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of when that started, Marge's emphasis on rhythm? I assume it's Marge started this and then Elna was teaching.
It was a book. I think it was loose.
She did a book, but it wasn't a book in the 20s. It was published in the 40s. The rhythmic structure of movement.
This was Elna's name, wasn't it? Or was it
Marge's? No, this was Marge's book. This is the only one I'm aware of. Was this Elna's area or Marge's area or?
Well, it was probably both. Mm-hmm. But I think Elna taught it as a course when we were there. Now, I don't know whether it was started in 28, because it wouldn't have probably been a freshman assignment. It would have been sophomore, junior, or senior. And I don't remember. I just know that Elma taught that.
Okay, you don't know then whether March had started it earlier or something.
I'm sure she had. Yeah, right. Okay. I picked it up. And probably, since it was a credit course as against technique, which was never credit.
Oh.
Technique was all for love.
I see. That was interesting. The movement when you were, you said Marge was working with the space, time, and force, had was she doing this even in your classes? Were you being exposed to where she was at the moment? And
yep.
You were
thinking about it, experimenting, trying out. For instance, if you had a sustained movement which moved through a range of low and high, what would it look like if you went to a percussive movement that would project in forward, sideward, right side, left side? Mm-hmm. So she was trying these out for size. But it did not become an organized technique. I don't like to use that word exactly because that makes you think of ballet as a system.
Yeah, no, I don't think of it as a technique either. As an organ, it's a way of organizing movement concepts.
For experiment, for breadth of experience. Mm-hmm. But, and again, when you went into Graham had a system mm-hmm. of technique that she wanted to use. It was demanding. And it was probably the reason I ended up with two hip replacements.
And maybe more others.
Maybe, yeah. Doris Humphrey died of hip problems. Doris, some of Doris's stuff was awful. Mm. You'd go in a full run and go into the floor in this position. Oh, dear. I decided I wouldn't do it. Mm. When we had some of Doris's technique invented. Hadia's technique, never violated what we would consider now good use of the body. Graham was herself had enormous hip flexibility. She could sit on the floor, and I remember some of the girls in the company complaining bitterly that they just could not do that. They'd fudge it. But they were very needed by Martha to do the composition, the production she was doing then. So they got away with it.
Oh, you know, Ben, I think we're back to the things Marge was doing. She was talking then about movement qualities, like percussive and sustained and abrupter, or swing with swinging part. I'm trying to figure out when.
She never used, for instance, she did not use the word, she used percussive, sustained, and I never heard her use movement as vibration, which was another possibility.
Vibratory collapse. I'm thinking of the sort of eight of them that eventually
became a kind of
system. Like swing and the swing, sustained, and percussive. And then there was abrupt. Those three particularly seemed to be a
kind of a nucleus.
We did a lot of
swinging movement, but it was not necessarily an illustration of the three principles of force, time, space. So it was as if swinging was a kind of a composite. It really is.
Yeah.
And you get swinging movement very well with arms and upper torso. It's very difficult with leg swings, it's not.
Well, because it's gravity and momentum. So later on, my exposure to it, it was, of course, with Mary and then with Marge, was that the swing, of course, was the release of the body part to gravity, which is the force. Then it came through with momentum and went into suspension. Now that, I don't know when that.
That was later.
Approach to that was, discovered.
Who defined swing in those terms?
This is where it's interesting because so much of those qualities of movement, in other words, movement qualities, then there's space, like direction and facing and level, and time. That whole organization really permeated the dance education books for so many years until recently, in the last 30 years, when the La La material has also come in, which is in a way very complimentary. But it was in kind of, I was trying to find out, I know Marge had, in the book that she created, Dance Experience, which was in, I think, 1940, at least when it was first published. She had these things in that the back of the book with the, it was the beginning of the qualities and the space and the time. So that's interesting.
But it was fairly simple compared to what the potential might have been.
Oh, yeah. And well, and actually then Mary Fee, later on, developed it even further.
That was after that.
And I mean, she even took it to her own notation, but that was really clear material for teaching. Very clear about what was space, what was time,
and how you use force,
and then in some interrelationships, and these were concepts to experience.
What Louise was doing was really the whole function of that, but I don't suppose Louise was as articulate as she might have been.
She was certainly when I was there as a student, which was much later. She was very clear. I mean, she was definitely working the concepts and saying, in a sense, because I came, and so was Mary Fee. Marge was, of course, retired when I came. And she would come back, though, every 2 weeks, do a week or two every summer and every semester. So that's my exposure to her, actually, was that.
When was it, buddy? When did you come up?
I started in graduate school in 1959, summers. And I did summers for 5 years. But summers were very active then. You had a lot of things. You could do a whole degree in all. And then I stayed away for a couple of years and then came back in 67 to finish my master's, and I've stayed since.
Yeah.
But at that time, Louise and Mary and Joe Hawes were teaching these, the rhythmic work, there were the qualities, those were all part of the space and time. Particularly Mary was teaching the concepts more, like perhaps Marge.
Yeah, I think she picked up.
She picked up on that a lot, because she and Marge worked together a lot, actually.
Was Ruth still teaching then?
She was teaching until, she was in the summers, because I think I took her last kinesiology class, which was in summer of 1963.
She was there. Fascinating.
Yeah, she went I was in contact with her for many years, almost till she died. But,
you know the story of Ruth with her computer?
I don't know. No. Well, I've heard some stories. I'm not sure which one.
She called me up. She was in her 90s. Mm-hmm. Maybe a year or two before she died. Probably 2 years. Charlie was still out on campus. She said, Valvermina, I've been playing bridge with some people who are into these computers. And she said, I want to find out about it. I wonder if Charlie would show me about the computer. So I clued Charlie, who was only too glad to have this chance. So he took her down to the office and showed her the keyboard and how word processing went. This was probably word perfect. Low level word perfect, I don't remember which one. And Ruth said, well, I've got to have one of these. Will you help me buy it? So Charlie said, sure. Well, then Ruth got her niece. What's her niece's name? Lovely woman. To help her decide where she was going to put it in the apartment. She was living in the Academic Tower. And furniture that she needs to put it on and rearrange it and so on. And Charlie and the niece and Ruth purchased a computer, and Charlie said, no, I'm going to help you use it. And she said, all Ruth said was, I want to do some more writing. I want to use it for word processing. That's all I have in mind. And Charlie was really quite impressed because she was in her 90s. And he'd been teaching a course for extension on computers for everyone. Also, he taught on Elder Hospital computers for everyone, of course, here on campus. And he kind of thought of her as his private pupil. And every once in a while, she'd call him up when she'd get stuck. And he either would talk her through something or maybe go over to the apartment and help her a little bit. And
she said on one of these trips to her apartment, she said, you know, Charlie, I've always said that you have to keep active, and I think that you have to keep the brain active. And I find using this machine has kept my brain active, and I just want you to know that. Well, he just glowed, and came home and told me she died a week later. That was
in 1988. She died in September of 88.
Yeah.
And I've only thought of that. Don't ever quit.
Never. Well, we saw her, Moby and I came and saw her actually in August, the month before Moby came in. And we had a chance to see her.
Moby was an enormous contribution to the professionalism of the department. I'm rambling on.
Your 4 years, did you take Ruth Glasso's courses? What kinds of PE courses in terms of Ruth's courses? Who else?
We had Ruth taught Kinese. That's right.
She taught Kinese, yeah.
And she was experimenting. Mm-hmm. She was trying out what you could do in functional Kinese. She assumed that we knew all about all the anatomy. We didn't need to go over any of that. We knew attachments, we knew the function of the muscle groups, we knew flexion and the action, tangent, all the rest of it. So as far as she was concerned, we had to know that. It wasn't her business. But I remember she had one attempt. This was kind of silly to remember this, except it bothered so badly. She decided that we would study walking, but instead of walking in an ordinary striding, upright position, we would walk in a prone position on a moving platform, and we would walk along the wall on this moving platform to study the walking motion. Well, the minute you try to walk along the wall, the platform moved away from the wall. That bomb
didn't work.
And that's the only functional. She was beginning to do some things with throwing, and it turned out to be bowling and basketball, essentially. Mm-hmm. Either both of which left me absolutely cold. Mm-hmm. but we did some stuff, practical throwing of that variety. Now I don't remember none of the other. I got A because I got A in every course I ever took in the department, but I didn't get A in everything I took on campus, that was for sure. But I don't remember anything else. I think she was feeling her way. Mm-hmm. What could you do with, now we had to be juniors because we had to have had an academy first, we had to stop from here. I wish I did remember more. Mm-hmm. I threw away all my collegiate notes. Mm-hmm.
At that time, did Marge have a class in theory and philosophy of dance? Because Fanny Taylor had given me some notes that came from the 30s that she'd taken very good notes, you know, day by day on Marge's theory and philosophy class. And I can't remember what year it was, but I wondered when, I don't know when it started.
When it was an inaugurated.
Yeah.
I'm sure we had an official class with Marge. But I have a feeling it had more to do with teaching techniques. I don't remember it again. I should have kept my notes because I would have, whatever it was, we would have had. We had Miss Trilling's course on theory of practice and physical education.
So it may have been since the time that you were there until Fanny was there, and I think this is in the later 30s, that she must have developed a theory and philosophy, of course.
The only book that Marge had out when we were in undergraduates was the old one about
dance education.
Oh,
well, there was a manual that we know of, and I don't. There was a manual of dance which was sort of a paperback.
This was a green hardcover book. Mm. It was Dance and Its Place in Education.
Oh, yes, that came in 1920. And actually, I think it was her thesis.
Was that? I don't know.
Yeah, it was her, at least that's what I've been told, that that was her master's thesis. In fact, I had her copy of it.
Did you?
She gave it to me, and she had, because she had used sections and ideas of it in her Dance as a Creative Experience course, and those notations are there. Like, this is okay, or no, that is and, but that was, because it even had the fundamentals in it, pictures of fundamentals, the movement of these body roles, the costumes, and
the roles and the crawls and that stuff.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of this, our experience as freshmen. Lead. And it was really overdone in the sense that it did not demand enough of an 18-year-old body. And so many of us had had ballet, which we would, having to forget, you couldn't do a tour de tape, by gosh. But you could do a lead turn. And you had to be very careful that you didn't
look like
Well, that's all right. That was not Marge's problem. She was, in a way, her own worst proponent in writing. And anything she wrote didn't come with the excitement and the freshness that she taught. It was hard. It gelled in a way that didn't have the real compelling quality that her teaching did. I don't know. Well, I think it's hard for anybody to write what you really and truly feel. I think interesting experience. I'm diverging again. Tuesday night, Jackie Machard talked to a group of vegetarians over at the house. Have you read her in the notes?
No, not yet. I've heard a
lot about it. Yeah. It's an exciting book because it pulls you. You can hardly put it down. Afterward, she used to live down the street here, and I knew her slightly. And this was when she was married to her dear beloved husband, who died very tragically. Anyway, I said to Jackie, "What are you going to write next?" She's doing another novel. She said, "No." I said, "Nothing for kids." Nope, nothing for kids. She did her first book, which was autobiographical, about infertility. This book is so completely involved with a process of characters that are made up, and a story that's made up. That as writing, it is much more than she is as a speaker. Thank heavens there are things like that. But not, that was not Marge's forte.
She didn't have, later on, I know we do have some copies of handouts that she did, but these were perhaps later in the 40s and 50s or
something. I remember.
Yeah. Because she couldn't reproduce things in those days.
No. Carbon copies on a typewriter.
That was it, yeah, that's right. Handouts are things. Awesome. It would be on the blackboard or something. It'd be it.
I remember the notes in rhythmic form and analysis bothered me because, like many other members of the dance group, we'd had music, a lot of us had piano as kids. And we were used to a notation that represented events in time, sequence of events in time. And I thought the dot and dash stuff was too bad. And I remember arguing with Marge that you really shouldn't try to superimpose a new method of showing events in time when there already is a good one that's understood by everybody ever's faced with this at all. Even public school songs. And she would have. She never got very far in trying to push something like that.
She already had it.
Yeah. Well, I do think that was too bad.
Yeah.
It was really not terribly functional in the sense that you could separate out the length of time that something occurred by a dash or a little dash or a big dash or whatever. And she had piano herself. I don't know why she did that.
Interesting, yeah.
It's
Well, it's a different spatial way of looking at direction.
Oh, yeah, sure it is, but...
Whether that's better or worse than something else, yeah.
Of course, by the time you got to Grant, and even though Louis Horst had a huge influence on our learning from the point of view of time spent, mm-hmm. but all there were in Graham's stuff were counts.
That's it, yeah.
And I remember she organized an understudy group. She wanted the members of the company to teach their parts. And so we were recruited to learn the parts of two dances.
A different spatial way of looking at direction.
Oh, yeah, sure it is. But
whether that's better or worse than something else. Yeah.
Of course, by the time you got to Grant, even though Louis Horst had a huge influence on our learning from the point of view of time spent, but all there were in Graham's stuff were counts.
That's it, yeah.
And I remember she organized an understudy group. She wanted the members of the company to teach their parts. And so we were recruited to learn the parts of two dances of that period, Primitive Mysteries and Celebration. And in the counts for Celebration, and I had Mayo Donald's part, which was pretty good. In Celebration, you would count 50, 60, 24, 25, 26, to whatever that phrase ended. And I said to Mayo one time, well, how come? She said, well, there was a piece in there that Martha didn't like, so she took it out, but she never changed the counts.
Now, what you were when was the Martha Graham time? What was your
when I went to New York in 35, I was at the studio that year, 35, 36, and 36, 37, less frequently, depending upon my teaching schedule at NYU. At the end of that second year, I was faced with a dilemma. J.B. Nash had offered me a full-time teaching appointment. I don't know what would have been a professorship, but it was to be, and pay more money than I'd been earning, mm-hmm. but I would have to commit to teaching these evening adult classes, specifically, plus other stuff. And Graham invited me into the company. Uh-huh. So I had to make a choice, and I often wish I think I could have bargained with J.B. because he was very anxious to have his faculty be known as something else. He often referred back to Martha Hellman in the company. But I didn't. I knew my future was in teaching, not in performance. But you know, how old was I then? In my 20s. And I often thought it would have been a smart thing to have done it for a year or two and done whatever teaching I could do and earn enough money to eat, and then gone on, but I didn't. History.
Never can't look back. Never spent money.
But it was fun to learn those dances. I remember the members of the company who were each taught one person their part, all gathered around Martha for us to perform. And they were very critical of us. We were going to show Martha that we could do these as well as the company. I don't know whether they thought they might lose their positions if somebody did. But it was funny. It was interesting.
Well,
yeah, you're done.
I think lots of things.
But the thing that I want you to see is that there was a connection between New York and Wisconsin.
There was, yeah.
And Baird Oxner helped. But it was hard for Marge. She was such a strong woman and had done so much. And to have, even, it wasn't competition exactly. It was too bad she didn't see it as a growth and development.
Yeah, yeah.
And then by the time the kids came along, like Bunny and the dancers who were, who did go out to New York, I don't know whether she accepted that. I think she had to.
I don't know because
at that point I was off. I mean, I wasn't, wasn't part of that.
Yeah. Well, I can remember talking to her, interviewing her in the early 70s, where she was even accepting ballet as a possible area of study for dance as things go on.
Yeah.
So,
well,
she changed.
Sure, and I think you give her great credit for that, but at the time that I was in New York and coming here, being around, Miss Trilling was saying, come and teach, and I was saying, oh, no, I don't. I did come back one summer.
You did?
And teach in 1940. With March. But, I remember one particular situation. A March wanted to develop a move, take a movement pattern and expand it. This is a class assignment. So I said, let's have them squash a bug. Put your foot on it and squash, and then move that into increasingly and march it through. That's what she meant. I thought it was a good example.
Yeah, well, right. Okay, well, thank you.
Let's I'll look up some of these old. The old orchestra programs and the other, and the